Oh, Hi, it's Yogi Chat. It's Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon here in LA, and it's time for another episode of Yoga Chat. So, I was at the Moksha Festival. Wow, there's an ambulance outside. I was at the Moksha Festival this weekend, and there were a lot of clothing vendors outside, and I'm looking at them saying, wow, this is really cool. You had all kinds of tank tops, you had all kinds of pants, all kinds of wraps. Then I realized that there, and also when I was at Wanderlust, a lot of the clothing did apply to your typical hatha yoga kind of class. You know, you couldn't go wrong. You buy that, you look fine. But there's specific kinds of yoga classes where it may not be quite appropriate. Or I mean, you'll be fine, but not quite. So I decided to make a fashion show today of sorts, where I'm going to talk about yoga styles that have their own style of clothing, so to speak. So since my first guest is trying to catch a class that's starting up soon, I'm going to start up the phone with her right now. It's Corin Pallman, who's an Iyengar teacher. Let me turn up the phone. Corin, are you there?
I am here.
Hi. So could you introduce yourself, please? Say where you teach and all that stuff.
Yes. My name is Corin Pallman. I'm an Iyengar yoga teacher, and I work at several of the Yoga Works locations as well as at the Iyengar Yoga Institute of Los Angeles.
Yeah, so the reason why I called you is, or I asked you to call in, is because I had this question: what is it with the Iyengar shorts?
The Iyengar shorts, the funny little things, aren't they? They come from India. The tradition comes from India. In Iyengar yoga, we spend a lot of time working with details of the legs. And so we like our students to show their legs. At the same time, because our teacher, BKS Iyengar, is Indian, there's a certain amount of modesty that we also like to have. And so the yoga shorts are very short, but they have an elastic band around the legs so that, you know, when you're in various yoga poses, the, let's say, bottom of the torso is well covered.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, the reason people are probably scratching their heads and say, what is she talking about, Iyengar shorts? It's one of those things that you notice if you go to an Iyengar studio. You know, if you go to Yoga Works, you may not see them. If you go to any other studio that teaches Iyengar classes, and a lot of them do, you probably won't. But if you go to the Iyengar Institute on La Cienega, the first thing you see on the rack of clothing are those shorts.
Which is
why I've always wondered, like, who wears them? I mean, you don't have to wear them to go to class, but for the most part, who do you find who wears those?
Well, a lot of the men wear them because, you know, men's shorts tend to be long and baggy.
Uh-huh.
And again, with all the work we do with the legs, it's nice to be able to see the musculature of the legs, the alignment of the legs. And so the men tend towards them because it's a short that they feel comfortable wearing. It keeps all of them contained. The women wear them as well, but also a lot of us in Iyengar and we'll wear short shorts. I mean, not so short that, you know, we're exposing ourselves, but we wear the short shorts, and those of us that teach use our legs a lot to teach as well.
So you're saying that the best thing to do, the recommended thing to do if you're going to an Iyengar class is to wear shorts, not the long yoga pants or anything like that?
Well, we like the yoga pants as well, but we don't like the bell bottoms as much or baggy pants as much. So pair of leggings work really well in an Iyengar class. Not everyone wants to show their legs, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
We have teachers that wouldn't dare be caught in shorts, the Iyengar shorts or any others. But we wear, you know, the form-fitting leggings as opposed to the bell-bottom leggings so that we can, again, observe the work of the legs well and show the work of the legs if we're teaching.
Now, does the same go with your top? Do you have to wear, like, a sleeveless top or something like that?
Well, it's interesting about the tops. Again, when we go to India to study with the Iyengar family, what's polite in India is different than what's polite in Los Angeles. And so when we go there, we all wear short-sleeve shirts. We don't wear anything tank top or strappy top, just because the Indian, you know, culture is different. I think the common thing in Los Angeles, you know, we'll wear tank tops and things, and we tend to wear more form-fitting things, or else we wear shirts that are tucked in. And the reason is we do a lot of inversions in Iyengar yoga, And you certainly don't want to go up into a headstand and have your T-shirt around your face.
That's true.
So, so either we wear a tucked-in shirt or a form-fitting shirt that doesn't, you know, doesn't bag around our face when we're in our inversions.
That explains a lot of things that I've seen. Like I said, it's only when you go to the institute that you see, you know, the more hardcore people wear that kind of clothing. Of course, if you go to the regular studios, they're wearing what they would wear for any other class. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to talk about is, for example, if I were a person who had never been to an Iyengar studio before or had never been to an Iyengar class before, besides, you know, just knowing the heads up on the clothing, what would I expect to see or know to bring or something like that?
Well, if you're coming to the Iyengar Institute, you don't need to bring anything. We've got mats and blankets and blocks and belts and a variety of very interesting wooden props that are used in ways. These are all wooden props that BKS Iyengar came up with, and it's really interesting and fun to use them. If you're taking an Iyengar yoga class at some of the other studios, then the tradition is to bring your own mat. Mm-hmm. And usually studios provide things. Although I just want to be really clear that Iyengar yoga doesn't require the use of props. It's just something that we do use to help people get into the poses better so that the effects of the poses are better. I know for myself, I taught Iyengar yoga in the public school system for 10 years, and I had huge classes of 50, and I worked with belts, blocks, and mats. That's all I had, and it worked fine. And I did everything.
So if you went to a class and the teacher said, bring out all these mats, and you say, bring out all these props, and you don't use them, you say, I choose not to, the teacher's not going to get on your case. They say, no, you must do this? Or will they just...
I mean, I wouldn't want to speak for everyone. Everyone's different mm-hmm. in any tradition. You know, personalities vary. I know for me, someone had a good reason they didn't want to use the props. Let's say, you know, it's an extreme example, but let's say when you were young, your little brother... you know, tied you to a tree and left you for 3 hours with a belt.
Okay.
You were traumatized by the use of belts. I certainly wouldn't insist you used a belt.
Okay. Not that you have to explain your whole life story to your teacher, but...
No, you might just say, I have my own reason. I mean, it's an extreme example, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But most people will feel the benefits. If a prop is required, most people will say, oh, yeah, that does feel better with that prop. You know, for the most part, it's clear... even to a beginning student, what the prop is doing. So,
yeah, I've also heard the Iyengar class described as a blanket folding class. So a lot of the class is spent, you know, setting up props just so, right? I mean, you have to fold your blankets a certain way, you know, you have to do... So it's great for the OCD kind of person who has to have everything done just the proper way. But if you're like a type A person who says, I have to do this, I have to sweat, I have to keep moving, this is not kind of the class for them, is it? I mean, it's... they should be doing it because it's good for them, but they're going to feel antsy doing this, right?
You know, again, I have to say it depends on the teacher. I myself move my students pretty fast.
Uh-huh.
And I'll get particular about blanket folding when it comes to something like shoulder stand because we're dealing with the very delicate vertebrae of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people after a good, strong class to walk out of class feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it depends on the teacher. You know, what you're saying can be true, but it's not always the case. And I think what we're finding is a lot of the classes that are, Iyengar yoga classes that aren't popular tend to be classes that keep people moving, especially if you're going to go to a class at night,
uh-huh.
you've been at work all day, sitting in a desk. You know, that's those classes that want to move. In the morning, you know, you get the morning crowd, it's a different crowd, and it's a different level of tolerance and attention to detail you find in the morning. So, yeah.
So anyway, the reason why I called you too or asked you to speak is because you have a very fun fashion sense. I mean, I just want to ask, are you one of the people, I mean, are you a burner? I mean, you look like you are. You look like you're one of the people that does the annual trek to the playa.
I do go to Burning Man regularly. And I also love to camp and dance and hike and things like that. So my only form of, let's say, traditional exercise, even though yoga is more than exercise, is yoga, but I like to be active and do other things. And I do have a sense of colorful style.
You do,
sure.
Which I don't know. Could you use that in a younger class? I mean, would it be acceptable?
Well, I kind of have the thing I always wear. I always wear a pair of shorts. and I don't wear the younger shorts unless I go to India. And then I wear a form-fitting top, and that's, I just basically wear the same thing in different colors all the time. And then I might do something fun with a jacket or a little wrap, or I tend to wear, you know, kind of fun clothes. I'll rock around in my yoga shorts and a pair of boots in the winter. That's usually pretty funny people. So, but that's just because I'm wearing my shorts and I want to stay warm.
That's true. That's true. But
it's
this
practical.
Is LA too. People do this. People wear shorts and boots in the summer too. So, you know.
Yeah.
So, I was going. I forgot what I was going to ask you. Oh, do you teach yoga at all at Burning Man?
I never have taught yoga at Burning Man, but I have taught yoga at some outdoor gatherings in the desert, and I'm actually scheduled to teach yoga at an outdoor gathering in San Diego next month.
Ooh, that would be fun. So if they want to find out more about you and your style and your classes and all that, do you have a website?
I do. It's the word inventive, ascent.
A-S-C-E-N-T?
Yes, .com.
Okay. And they can find out all about this, and they can even ask you questions about the funky shorts. By the way, going back to the funky shorts, where do you buy them?
You can go to the Iyengar Yoga Institute of Los Angeles to get the funky shorts, and they come in lots of fun colors.
So they, but they you can't mail order them then? You just go there and buy them? Is that what it is?
You can probably get them online.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there is no specific manufacturer that makes them that people can get them from?
There's a variety of people that make them, and people tend to like some more than others. So I would just say to go online and Google Iyengar Yoga Shorts, and you'll come up with a couple different styles.
Yeah, polka dot and striped and paisley. I don't know. Probably not, though. It's pretty conservative, isn't it?
There's some different. There is a company that does really colorful ones. Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm going to let you go because I'm watching the clock here, and you need to get to class. I don't want you to be late for your class.
I do. I just want to say, you know, encourage people to check out my website because I have 41 stilt walking costumes posted there, and there's some fun eye candy there.
Stilt walking. Next evening, you do is yoga on stilts.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next time.
I know. You know, you probably be the first one who does that.
It's true.
Okay, well, thanks again, Corin.
Thanks for inviting me to your show. I really enjoyed myself.
And I'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Corin. It's funny, because what had happened is some time ago, I had done a talk on yoga teachers and how they had day jobs that had nothing to do with what with being a yoga teacher, and it seemed like I had interviewed an Anusara teacher, a Shivananda teacher, a power yoga teacher, and I think it was a vinyasa flow teacher, and so I thought, let's give equal opportunity to the other styles of yoga, and so, of course, you know, Iyengar, this is great, because they do have this, you know, a different kind of clothing, and like Corin had just said, which actually, you know, I didn't really know until I started researching this. They really are really attentive, or they do try to pay attention to, you know, the way your muscles line up to make sure that you are in perfect alignment. So this is the ultimate alignment yoga class, Iyengar, which I highly recommend everybody to take at least a few times just to get your alignment straight. Because honestly, I've had so many injuries through the years that I've been doing this just because I didn't do it correctly. And if I'd learned to do it correctly the first time, I might have saved myself all these injuries. So anyway, let's see what we have going on here. I wanted to play a different song, another song. But before I get to that, so anyway, what I'm talking about basically is shows, you know, you have the standard stuff. You have your Lululemon, you have your Lucy, you have your Prana, your Zoba, your Be Present, your everybody, you name them. And they are what everybody buys as yoga clothing. And it's perfectly fine. You can wear it to any kind of yoga class. It's just that the particular kinds of yoga styles I'm going to talk about today have a specific fashion sense about them. So if you were to walk into class and you wanted to look like you'd been there for a long time and you belonged, this is what we're going to be talking about today. So anyway, time to move on to the next song. Oh, you know what? I just realized I didn't introduce the first song. The first song was Mira by Prem Joshua. And I had found out about Prem Joshua and his band through the White Swan dude at Wanderlust. I see him at all the yoga festivals. In fact, he's going to be at Bhakti Fest next month. But he told me that Prem Joshua was a very traditional kind of musician. But for some reason, this particular album, Luminous, what's it called? I'm sorry. Luminous Secrets, was a little bit more upbeat, more remixed. And so this one was called Mira. So if you like that one, it's off Prem Joshua's album, Luminous Secrets. So this next one I have for you is... Oh, I love this one too. This is from Spirit Voyage. And this is Kundalini. And it's going to introduce my next speaker, who is a Kundalini teacher. And this is from Niranjan Kaur. From the album Kundalini Remix. Hold on, let me go see, find it. Here it is. It's called Jai Tegang. It's Ron Salman's radio mix. Seriously, I can't tell you what that means, but it's a great song, so I'm going to fire it up right now. Hope you like it. I'm back. So that was Niranjan Kaur. My next caller will be Kia Miller. She's a Kundalini yoga teacher, and actually she teaches a blend of Kundalini yoga and Vinyasa flow. So I believe she calls it Radiant Flow. But she is trained in both, Vinyasa flow, Hatha yoga, and Kundalini styles of yoga. So I thought she'd be a great person to talk to because she too has great yoga style. I ran into her actually at the Moksha Festival this weekend, saw her walking around. I said, perfect. You are the person I want to talk to about what to wear and how to look hip in a Kundalini class, if there is such a thing. Because seriously, if you go around the yoga communities, I made this comment once before, you have the Lulu yogis, you have the Kundalini yogis, and at one event I was at, I called them the church yogis because they were basically people who were there in very, very conservative clothing. I mean, it was a conference, to get granted, but I could just picture them if they were practicing, they'd be wearing very conservative clothing. So sometimes you can tell what kind of yoga somebody practices just from the clothing that they wear. So the thing to do too is that when you show up for a class and you've never been there before, it's kind of nice to know whether what you're wearing is appropriate to the class you're about to take. So while we're waiting for Kia to call in, the other thing I wanted to mention about Kundalini yoga classes, or one of the identifying things about a Kundalini class, is that there's always music involved. At least most of the classes that I've gone to, at Golden Bridge or Yoga West or other places around town. There's another Kundalini place in Pasadena called the Awareness Center, but I'm totally guilty of not going there very often, only because it's a bit of a trek from the West Side to get there. But a lot of the things is they do a lot of chanting, they do a lot of singing, there's a lot of music, and so just be aware that that's going to happen. You don't have to chant if you don't want to, obviously, but a lot of the exercises are done to music, to chanting, and a lot of times you'll be asked to chant a certain mantra while you're doing something. And it just helps build up the experience. Of course, I'm not the Kundalini person, but I do it enough to know that that's basically what happens in class. So, let's see. Was there anything else I wanted to talk about while I'm waiting for Kia to call in? Not really. I can sit here and twiddle my thumbs, but that would not be right. Okay, so let's see. What do we have going on? Oh, speaking of Kia, maybe I can plug her event that's coming up while I'm waiting for her to call in. She has something this Friday at Yoga Works Main Street. It's a Bhakti Flow class, I believe, with Kia Miller, and Sarah Ivanhoe, and Icona, who is Sukh Dev and her husband, Akadama. And it's a pre-Bhakti Fest event coming up at Yoga Works. And so if you want to meet Kia, who hopefully will be calling soon, she'll be there at Yoga Works at 7:30 p.m. I sure hope that the phone is working because she's not calling. She did say she was going to call at 1:30, and it's about 1:30 now. So I'll give her a little bit more time. If you want to call in, ask questions, the number is 213-252-0998. And I've always wanted this to be a talk show, but for some reason, because it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, people are working and they can't call, which is kind of sad. But there is a podcast, and the podcasts are at ayogist.podomatic.com, and that is ayogist.podomatic, podomatic.com. Or if you have iTunes, you can go to iTunes, go to the iTunes store. Under podcasts, do a search on Yoga Chat, and you'll find this. This is the 15th episode, so there will be 14 more if you were to go there right now that you can listen to before I post this one. Keep you entertained. We've been talking about all kinds of fun things. We've been talking about yoga outdoors, yoga to relieve stress. We've been talking about yoga festivals. All kinds of things. And if you have any suggestions, what you want us to talk about, feel free. go to the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/yogachat. Post whatever you want, any comments you have, or if you want to be interviewed about something, you have some information that you want to share with all the listeners, you can do that. So, you know what? I just wondered if she's calling the right number. Hold on a second. Let me double check. Okay, I guess I don't want to keep dead air while I'm trying to find out where she's at. So, let's see. What can we do here? I guess we can listen to ambulances go by. Here, let's see. I'm going to try to send her a message. Why don't I do this? Since she's not on the phone yet, I'm going to play the next song that I was planning to play. It's another Kundalini favorite of mine. This is by Snodam Kaur. And again, this is a name you are going to know very well by the time we are done with this show. It's the Mool Mantra by Snodam. And let me go find that. Mm-hmm. Here it is. It's from her Anand album, and it's the Mool Mantra. So let's listen to that, and I'll try to track down Kia in the meantime. See you on the other side.
Come Thank you.
about Snottam Kaur's voice that's very calming and relaxing, which is exactly what I needed when I couldn't figure out why Kia wasn't calling in. It turns out, I guess she had the wrong number, and I was posting all over Facebook, call this number, find Kia, call. Well, she called in, and I'm glad she's on the phone, so I'm going to bring her up right away because she has a class to make, too. So hold on a second. Kia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, so we are talking about, as you know, fashion, and you are my fashion-forward kundalini person.
That's funny. Okay.
So tell me all about the clothing, what the look is, and why it is the way it is.
Well, it's just kind of interesting. In the old school days, the students of kundalini yoga all took on the dress of Yogi Bhajan at the time, which is, you know, and in a sense they took on the religion of Sikhism.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all wear white, and they wear a turban over their heads, and they have all of the other elements that Sikhs have, the little knife, they never cut their hair, they curl it up on top of their head, they wear shorts, all of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the next generation of kundalini yoga teachers, and we're asked to wear white. And there's the reason behind that is that white includes all of the other colors, and that it expands your aura, or that energetic field around you. So the idea is, like, there's a scientific reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so our next generation, we're trying to make the kundalini wear a little more hip, a little bit less sort of off-putting, you could say, for
mm-hmm.
younger students.
Mm-hmm.
So we still wear white, but we wrap our heads in creative ways and have some fun with it, basically. It's been a journey, you know, just finding white yoga clothes is a journey.
Well, that's true, because if you were to go to Lululemon, let's say, you're definitely not going to find any kundalini-like clothing there.
No, that's right. And if you do, it's super, super tight. And it's not really so elegant to wear super tight white clothes. So finding a way also, you know, to wear clothes that aren't so super tight and revealing, I guess you could say that's part of the kundalini school of thought as
uh-huh.
well.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be functional, but not sort of flashy in and of itself, not distracting,
mm-hmm.
you could say. So, finding clothes has been an interesting challenge.
So if I were to show up for a kundalini class in black leggings and a blank skimpy tank top, would they kick me out of class, or what would they do?
No, they would welcome you. It's mostly teachers that we're asked to wear white
mm-hmm.
when we teach, and we're asked to cover our heads. And when you practice kundalini yoga, you're working with a lot of energy. So you're building and releasing energy in your body. It works on the energetic of the body. And so they ask you to cover your head so that you contain the energy a little bit, if that makes sense. So you don't just kind of skyrocket your energy. So that's part of the reason. But students coming in, you know, they kind of pick up what feels appropriate to them. Some people wear white, some people, you know, put a little bandana over their head, some don't. So I think it depends on your level of comfort.
Well, also how much you want to invest, I guess, in yoga clothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, if you practice all kinds of styles, you could have a closet full of clothes just for yoga classes.
That's right, we could. Now this is my kundalini wardrobe, and here's my hot yoga wardrobe.
Exactly. And my hotter yoga wardrobe. So anyway, going, we were talking about, I'm having a fun time with my telephone here and the microphone, but hopefully people can hear me, because I can't get too close to it. As far as props, do they use props in, there is the ubiquitous sheepskin. Now, you have to explain what that's all about.
I know. Being a mostly vegan, the sheepskin thing was interesting for me. The technology, the science behind the sheepskin is that you want to You want to meditate on a natural fabric, preferably like sheepskin or at least wool or natural cotton, so that it separates your electromagnetic field from the earth. And so then that has an energetic effect whilst you're meditating. Plus, the sheepskin then sort of builds, each meditation you do, you're building the energy upon the last meditation. So it kind of, it holds energy. So that's sort of the science behind it, why one might have one.
Yeah,
I finally got one because I grew up on 110,000 acres in the Falkland Islands. So it's a British colony, and it was a sheep farm. And I decided, well, if I'm going to have one, I want one from a sheep that's lived a very long and lovely life. And I want it to have been on the farm that I grew up in. So my brother sent me one.
Yeah, but now that's just precious to you, and you are not going to let that go.
That's right, yes.
So nobody ever dare take that from you.
Well, I hope they have a great meditation if they do.
I know. I mean, so you know, the people who do, who are the people who go to yoga, sorry, my brain is not working straight today. If you were going to a Kundalini class, then you could pretty much tell the frequent Kundalini goers from the non-frequent Kundalini goers, because they have their mat, their sheepskin rug wrapped around their mat, correct?
Exactly. I know from my classes people who come in who come from that lineage, and I know the people who come in from other kinds of yoga. And I have a big cross section. I tend to have more people newer to Kundalini yoga come into my class because I teach at Yoga Works, and it's primarily a Vinyasa Flow studio.
Correct.
And so I kind of see myself in a way as like a bridge for those students to have an experience of Kundalini yoga. In a form that's maybe a little more digestible than going to a full-on Kundalini yoga studio where the language is different, the mantras are different, and the look of everything is different. So, in a way, I just like to be that bridge of tuning people into what a powerful practice it is, so that they'll then go to explore a little bit more deeply.
Oh, definitely. Because you do incorporate a lot of the Kundalini concepts in your class, yet it's not, like you say, full-on Kundalini, where you're doing the constant, you know, breath of fire and the, you know, the, I don't know what the name of these poses, but you do them for, like, long periods of time. I mean, I've taken classes with Gurmukh where she's telling, and go, and you think, like, oh, my God, how much longer do I have to do this? And it's you know, I find, in a way, Kundalini yoga maddening, because it just messes with your brain, because you're doing this thing over and over and over and over again. But when you're done with it, it's amazing. I don't know if you feel good from the relief or just because it actually did something to your brain.
Well, you're doing so much. You're strengthening your nervous system. You know, you're building your capacity to hang in there when things get tough. So you're, in a sense, building that capacity to pause before you act.
Yeah.
You're also working the endocrine system, the digestive system, circulatory system. You know, the whole shebang is happening. But definitely the mind, the ego gets confronted, and we start to learn what our self-defeating habits are, because we come up against them very quickly. And there is a sense of triumph, you know, when you persevere through something and you get out to the other side and you feel that great energetic release that you get.
Oh, definitely. It's like, you know, you say, do a squat. Okay, I can do a squat. Keep doing it. Okay, I can do this. Yeah, I'm the warrior. I can do this. And then after 5 minutes of doing it, you say, are we done?
I know, right?
But then you've really built up the muscles in your legs. So you're, you know, in a while, you have great muscle tone when you take a Kundalini class.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's, you know, there's a good thing to doing it. It's like going to the gym, but you're chanting at the same time.
Yes.
So also, because of the sheepskin, obviously, you're not doing a lot of asana, I mean, standing poses, right? I mean, is most of it seated? I mean, what do you do with the sheepskin?
Yeah, they don't do a lot of standing poses. Or you take your mat and you sit the sheepskin on top. The sheepskin definitely is nice to sit on when you're meditating, just purely from a physical comfort level. It's soft and warm. So that's always good.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And, of course, cushions to sit up on are important because you do a lot of meditating in Kundalini Yoga. So mm-hmm. you're sitting up for long periods of time. So that's mm-hmm. another sort of prop that we use a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you were to send somebody to buy, if somebody, for example, were to approach you and say, where do I buy, you know, some really cute white gauzy stuff and some props, you know, where would you send them?
I'd probably send them to spiritvoyage.com, which is a Kundalini-based music and clothing online store.
Oh.
And so you would not only get your wonderful, you know, natural cotton white clothing, but you'd be able to apply some of the mantras as well. And so much of Kundalini Yoga is built around chanting and using mantra as a way to penetrate beyond the normal noisiness of our mind. So, mm-hmm. yeah, spiritvoyage.com.
You know, the funny thing is I always thought of them as a music source, but I never realized that they had clothing too.
Yes, they have a whole clothing, you know, and book option now, so they've been growing their offering.
Or I'm sure you could go to Spirit Fest, which is coming up next month, and I'm sure there'll be all kinds of vendors for that kind of clothing.
Exactly.
So,
yep.
Do you happen to know the date of Spirit Fest? Because I know it's after Bhakti Fest, isn't it?
It is, and I don't know.
Huh.
It's on the East Coast.
Yeah, I think it's in West Virginia. I'll have to find out the answer and post that somewhere or talk. Oh, maybe I'll have an episode just on Spirit Fest. Oh, my God, it would be cool just to play
that
music.
It would be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be. And then we can invite all kinds of people to talk about Kundalini Yoga and what it means to them.
Exactly. And you'll find so many different stories from people, I think, who've had profound experiences from the practice and, you know, and how it transforms them.
Definitely.
That would be great.
Okay, so there's one last question I want to ask you, and this is about the gong. Now, it was a conversation, actually, Felicia Tomasco from LA Yoga Magazine and I had on Facebook earlier today about Kundalini classes and the gong. Is there always a gong in a Kundalini class?
There's not always a gong, because not everybody has a gong.
But assuming you have access to one.
If you have access to one, it's a lovely thing to play the gong, and it's part of, you know, the technology that Yogi Bhajan brought. Again, the sound of the gong helps to penetrate and release blockages from the emotional body, so emotional and energetic body. So it is something that is included in many Kundalini Yoga classes, and there's some people who are very masterful at playing it.
I didn't even realize there was a way of playing a gong, but... they're so masterful, you don't realize that there is a technique, I suppose.
Yes. I mean, and there are techniques, and it doesn't mean that not anyone could pick up a gong and play it, but you know, you have a relationship with it, and a relationship with the sound, and some people, like Satanta, who plays down at Yoga Works in Southern California, is phenomenal, and Kari Jilan, who plays up at Golden Bridge, who's also phenomenal. So there's some very talented people, should we say.
Actually, that was the topic of the conversation, Harry Jiwan. He's going to be teaching a class every Wednesday at Bhakti Yoga Shala in Santa Monica for the month of August. And so the question was, is he going to bring his gong? And I said, well, yeah, of course he should. He must. He will. I mean, I'm assuming so.
I would assume so, too.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, because I plan to go there tonight.
Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I want to find out how it was.
I know, because it's you know, on the Santa Monica is like the center of all that is yoga, but it's sorely lacking Kundalini. I mean, there is a Kundalini class at Santa Monica Yoga with Elizabeth St. Clair, and then there's your class, but, you know, there's one at Exhale. I think Maya still teaches there, correct?
She does, and my husband Tommy subs for her when she's gone, and also Nam Yoga is opening soon.
Yeah, I believe that's next month, right?
It's Guru Nam, who split off from the traditional Kundalini yogis, but he teaches a very potent form of Kundalini yoga.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so this is a good opportunity for people to try it out. And the thing is, too, Bhakti Yoga Shala is on a donation basis. It's a suggested donation of $15. So for anybody who hasn't been to a Kundalini class who's on the West Side, I highly suggest trying it either tonight, Wednesday at 6:30, or next Wednesday. I believe it's every Wednesday in August, so this is your chance to do it. But in the meantime, I know you have to get to class, Kia.
Thank you.
So I'm going to let you go. Judy. I talked about your event coming up this Saturday at Yoga Works.
Oh, great. Oh, this Friday?
Is it this Friday?
It's this Friday.
This Friday.
Friday night, the Bhakti Yoga event.
Yeah, with Sarah?
Yes.
Yes, and Ikana. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. And you don't have to bring the sheepskin.
No, you don't have to bring the sheepskin. Just bring yourself and come and... and come and have fun with us. We're just going to chant and rock the house and, yeah, have fun.
It's going to be lots of fun. So thanks, Kia. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Joni. Bye-bye.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was Kia Miller, teacher at Yoga Works, and she's the wife of Tommy Rosen, who is another yoga teacher, Kundalini yoga teacher, who also does yoga for recovery, yoga for addiction, all kinds of things, and they're also getting involved in this new festival that's coming up next year that I've been hearing about. I've been seeing flyers, and I haven't really quite... done much research about it yet to find out about it. It's called Tadasana Festival. I know that it's coming up, but much more than that, I really don't know. But like I said, it's next year, so I have time to find out about that. So the next caller is... Oh, this is fun. This is fun. Okay, so you had the white flowy Kundalini stuff. And what would be the exact opposite in your mind of white, flowy, gauzy, all covered up, head covering? Well, of course, it would be Bikram, right? So my next caller is a Bikram teacher. And it's funny, I had the hardest time trying to find a Bikram teacher to talk on this show. Don't ask me why. Maybe it's because I'm not a big Bikram fanatic, so I don't have a lot of friends who do Bikram. Hold on, here's the phone call, just a second. Yoga Chat, this is Joni. Yeah, hi, Mari. Hold on. I'm going to put you on the air. Yeah, just hold on. I'll turn up the volume. Mari, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, so you are on the air, and I was just starting to introduce you, so I'll let you introduce yourself. So who are you, where do you teach, and what do you teach?
Well, I'm Mari Laranjeda. I own the Bikram Yoga Studio in Santa Barbara, and I teach there as well.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is I was just saying that I had the hardest time trying to find a Bikram yoga teacher among my circle of friends. So I'd put it out on my Facebook page, does anybody know a Bikram teacher? I want to talk to somebody who has some kind of fashion sense. And Sarah Garney, who's like the Bhakti babe, I know her from the Bhakti community, who lives in Santa Barbara, said, oh yes, you must talk to Mari. So I called your studio, and through a series of messages, I finally got hold of you. So I'm so glad that you're here to talk to us about Bikram yoga and the Bikram fashion, because as we know, the less you wear, the better, correct?
That's right. It's really hot in there, so definitely don't want to have baggy, loose clothing on.
Yeah, so...
Plus it looks terrible when it gets wet and sweaty.
Oh, yeah, can you imagine? So I guess it's one of those things, like, you tell runners, don't wear cotton.
Exactly. We do a lot of Lycra is a fabric that tends to work really well. Kind of thin and form-fitting, and it dries quickly, and it just tends to hold up. It looks flattering in the hot, especially when it gets wet. It doesn't lose its shape.
No, the thing is, I have to ask, okay, most people who go to Bikram yoga, if they have really great bodies, will wear the skimpy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just starting out and you know you have all the, you know, the muffin tops and the cottage cheese and all that stuff, I mean, what do you do? I mean, do you hide it all and suffer in silence through the baggy clothes, or do you just bite the bullet, do it, and say, oh, well, I love all these love handles and I'm flaunting it? I mean, what do people do?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When they first start coming, quite often they're more conservative with their clothes. They will sort of try to suffer through it with, you know, a T-shirt and longer, not necessarily long pants, but like a capri kind of a thing on. And you are practicing in front of the mirror.
So that's right.
Because you're kind of looking at yourself throughout the practice, which is a really interesting thing to do. And you build a relationship with it. You kind of go through your ebbs and flows of acceptance and non-acceptance of your body. And most of the time, after, you know, 6 months to a year, people's outfits really evolve and they start wearing a lot less just because they've become more comfortable with their shape and looking at it as a body and not necessarily as, you know, oh, I need to be ashamed because I have this role, and or, you know, it's a nice evolution.
And there's no judging anyway. I mean, nobody looks at you and say, oh, you know, you're not the hot body that I am or anything like that.
You know, I honestly think people are too busy judging themselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the teacher does tell you, you know, look at yourself in the mirror. And it's one of these things that you have to get used to, actually staring at yourself for, what, 90 minutes, right?
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting. People are very uncomfortable with it in the beginning. You know, it's like you tell them and they just don't, it doesn't really sink in that yeah, you're really going to look at yourself in the mirror for almost, a lot of the postures we do, you're not looking at yourself in the mirror. So it's not a full 90 minutes, but, you know, for about an hour of the practice, you're looking at yourself in the mirror. And that can bring up a lot of stuff for people. Some people feel really uncomfortable with that, or they're just not used to it. They feel self-conscious looking at themselves, or they're just not that used to, like, keeping a steady gaze on themselves, like meeting their own eye gaze in the mirror, can be a really intense thing for people.
I mean, I know I can't. I mean, yeah. If I have to look, I'll either stare at my feet or stare at something that, I like to stare closer to the floor. So like I say, I stare at my feet because it's closer to the floor. Or sometimes I look at somebody else and hope the teacher doesn't realize I'm looking at somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're close enough to me.
People usually get used to it over time. You know, it's definitely something that you see, you know, in beginners, people who are in their first 6 months, they tend to do that a bit more. And, you know, for somebody who are that really, they just don't connect with looking at themselves in the mirror, it's not the right practice for them. So they'll, you know, they'll go and they'll do something else. Like a, you know, usually in vinyasa rooms, you don't have mirrors.
That's true.
So, you know, people aren't, they don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. So for people who don't know anything about Bikram, I find that hard to believe. But for people who don't know much about it, the reason behind the skimpy clothing is because the room is set to a really high temperature. What temperature is it usually set at?
105.
And what's the reason behind the 105?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, but basically you have really increased vasodilation. Your whole vascular system really opens up. You're also your lymphatic system. So your body is pumping a lot more blood. So there's a lot more nutrients being delivered to all the different parts of your body. All of your glands and organs are getting basically a flush with all that blood flowing through them because the veins are so opened up.
Uh-huh.
That's the reason why people will often feel a little bit lightheaded in the Bikram yoga classes, because their body hasn't quite figured out how to deal with that volume of blood flowing around and still get enough blood up to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually that lightheadedness kind of passes after people practice for a couple of months, because their body becomes more efficient at keeping the proper levels of blood oxygen in the brain.
I guess it's sort of like...
Another reason
is because
with all that blood moving around through your muscles, you can stretch a lot more deeply. I mean, you know, we all know that when you're stretching, you're creating little micro tears in your muscles. And with all that blood moving into the muscles, your body fills up those little tiny micro tears really quickly and starts to rebuild tissues. So you actually start to lengthen out your muscles, actually change your body in a way that will last outside of the room more quickly than if you're stretching when your body is cold, because you don't have that increased blood flow moving around.
Well, that's true, because I remember as a runner, they used to say, you know, you really shouldn't be stretching right before you run when your muscles are still cold, because you could potentially hurt yourself. So sometimes
exactly.
They say, run a mile, wait till your muscles warm up a bit, and then stretch them.
Right.
And because you get more efficient stretching at that point and least likely to hurt yourself. But going along with the heat is the drinking of the water. Now, I know that, you know, in a Bikram class, they tell you exactly when to drink the water, right?
Well, that varies from studio to studio. In my studio, what we do is, in all studios, you wait for the first half hour.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, and so all Bikram studios do that. We wait until like 25 minutes into the class. We have a little warm-up for the first 25 minutes, the first few postures. After that, we have the first drink. So that's mm-hmm. sort of across the board. But there, from there on out, it really depends on the studio director. What the studio's policy is on water. Some studios, you just can drink water whenever you want after that. In my studio, we have a few times where we ask people to keep the water drinking, but if people feel like they really need water, they're welcome to drink it. Just making sure that it's in between the postures so that, you know, they're just keeping with the stillness and holding the energy for the rest of the room and not drinking water while everybody else is in a pose.
I see. No, I thought it was strange because, you know, in every other yoga class I've ever been to, you know, non-Bikram, obviously, some people bring the water, some people don't believe in drinking it at all because you want to retain the heat. But when you do drink the water, it's basically whenever you want to, whenever you feel it's appropriate to do it. So Bikram, it's like, you know, drink your water now. And it's like, the first time I went to Bikram class, I thought, well, that's kind of bizarre. But the thing is also, I'd walked in without a bottle and the front desk said, did you bring any water? And I said, no, I didn't. And they sold me a bottle because they said, you're going to need it.
Mm-hmm. And I bet you were glad to have it, too.
Well, it's true, because I said, well, it is going to be a hot class. It'll probably be a good thing to have. And so I did. And then it made sense to me. So, you know, from then on, if I do go to a class, if I remember, I bring the bottle of water. Is it recommended that you drink it? Is it cold? Room temperature? What's the best? Is there anything recommended?
Everybody's got their preferences. We recommend that you actually don't drink ice cold water during class, but of course a lot of people will show up with their, you know, half bottle of frozen water, and, you know, people definitely are trying to make themselves as comfortable as possible in the hot room, and it's hard to stop them from doing that, so we don't really, you know, whatever people want to bring in terms of their water is totally fine. It is easier on your body not to have ice cold water coming into your system when you're in that hot room. It kind of throws off the natural cooling system of your body. Your body's cooling itself down through sweating, which is a huge part of the practice, is getting that deep sweat. Your body is detoxing a lot through your skin and through that sweat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's better to have just cool water or room temperature water, but people like their water ice cold.
Well, I can see the half frozen water, because after 100, being in a room of that's 105 degrees, in no time that water is going to be melted anyway, right?
Exactly. So they're drinking it. They drink it half frozen. By the time, you know, it gets down to the bottom, it's all, you know, that way it's cold. They're drinking cold water throughout the entire class. But what happens a lot of the time is that then that ice doesn't completely melt, and so then, you know, then they have no water. All they've got is a big hunk of ice in their bottle, and then they're like, I want to go get more water. It's like, sorry.
You can't leave the room.
So I always tell people, just bring your water bottle. Don't be fussy about it. That's a big part of the practice with Bikram, is just letting go of your preferences. You know, you come in the room, it's a 90-minute practice. It's always the same postures. The temperature in the room might vary a little bit depending on how hot or cold it is outside. And, you know, but it's really about just being present with what is. You know, maybe you get the teacher that is not your favorite teacher. Well, how do you be your own teacher? And how do you just be in charge of your own practice and not be so reliant on the circumstances that you arrive into?
And I think that's the plus of having the same 26 poses over and over again, because you know what the next pose is going to be.
Exactly, and people improve very quickly with that. You know, Bikram, I think, is a really excellent practice for people who haven't done a lot of yoga before, because they get a really good foundation. It's like they learn how to learn how to do yoga.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're given the same postures over and over again, and in the beginning, you know, they're just doing a little bit of the pose, but 6 months later, that posture looks completely different from how they started it, because they've practiced that same pose over and over again with really detailed instruction, And we do everything twice. You know, so we do it once, and then right away we do it again. So they really get two chances to understand that posture in their body.
Uh-huh. So they, yeah, because I always wondered, like, you do it once and then you do it twice again. And, but that's, I guess there's a method behind the madness. Like you say, the first time is just to figure out how it works. And the second time is to actually do it now that you know how you're supposed to do it.
Right. And we hold the postures, you know, 60 seconds the first time and 30 seconds the second time.
Ah.
So the first time, it's like you have time. You're figuring it out. You're figuring out how to breathe in the pose. You're making little adjustments for your alignment, all those little things. And you're also really getting the cardiovascular benefit of the endurance of holding the pose for the full 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the second set, the 30-second set, it's like, okay, you already understand now how to do this posture, now go deeper into the pose. Now push your hips out more. Now kick your leg up higher. Now bring your body down more. All of those kinds of things, which you know, your body has the muscle memory from the first set, so you can go deeper in there in the second set.
I get it. So is there a method to the behind the sequencing of this 26? Does it start like from the head to the foot to the head, or the, you know, extremities to the core? I mean, is there anything behind that, why it's in that sequence?
Yeah, there is definitely. This sequence was designed by Vishnu Ghosh, who is the brother of Paramahansa Yogananda.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they really come from a lineage of really excellent yogis in India, and they designed the system really working with the glandular system of the body. So for the first part of the practice is really a warm-up. It's warming up your spine. It's getting everything in your body moving. And then the series really works systematically with all of the different major glands in your body, you know, your thyroid gland, your pineal gland, your pituitary gland. Everything, we do a lot of compression and release in this series. And so, you know, we do a deep compression and then we really open it up and release. So it creates a damming effect. You know, when you compress, it cuts everything off. And then when you release, it flushes it through.
Huh.
So there's a lot of secretions into the system from all of the hormones in the body. And then it's a lot of really, really deep spine work. Also, which, you know, most yoga is, there's a lot of focus on the spine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing in the practice is a lot of focus on the knees. There's a lot of postures that are really designed for the health of the knee joints, for rebuilding and healing the knees. So we do a lot of sort of knee and leg strengthening postures.
Uh-huh.
And also compressions on the knees. So keeping the thigh muscles strong and also stretched. Is really important for the health of the knees. And then also we do the compressions of the knees, which really helps to rebuild the tissues and, you know, create synovial fluid in the joint.
Well, you know, now that I know all of this, and this is not, I guess they don't really explain this to you in class itself. You basically show up, you do the poses, but I guess I've never had a teacher explain it to me that way, you know, the reasoning behind it. So now I think, given that, I think I want to take another Bikram class and give it a shot and see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just kind of hear about Bikram himself, and mm-hmm. a lot of the time Bikram, you know, he's just become such a character, and he's really sort of an eccentric yogi in a way. And people kind of lose sight of what, how much science really went into creating this this series and how amazingly beneficial it is for the body. I mean, that's really the reason why Bikram yoga is so successful, is because it changes people's bodies and people find themselves experiencing a level of health that they, and so quickly, like within months, people are finding, I hear it every day. Oh, I went to the doctor and I could barely, you know, squat down. He said, oh, you have to do something. Somebody told me I should come here. So they start coming, and then, you know, 3-4 months later, they're like, wow, I can't believe how much more mobility I have. I can't believe how much better I'm breathing and sleeping, or, you know, I've lost weight. There's so many different things.
Now, how often do they come by, though?
I would say, you know, we have people who come every day. I have people who take 10 classes a week. You know, they do double
wow.
a few times a week. That's a little bit extreme.
Yeah. They need
but
a life.
I would say the average, you know, sort of regular student is, they come like 3 to 4 times a week. And with a practice, a regular practice of 3 to 4 times a week, people will definitely see real benefits in their body.
Yeah, yeah. And so they bring their own mats, and it doesn't have to be cushioned, really, because, I don't know, most Bikram yoga studios are on carpeted floors. Is there any reason behind the carpeted floor?
I'm sure there is. it's because it prevents slippage.
Is that what it is, or is it cushioning
yeah,
for the
you
knees?
Know, people, because with all that sweat, you know, a lot of studios, they have the hardwood floors.
And, yeah.
You know, with all that sweat, if somebody took a dive on the hardwood floor, you know, that's just kind of a lawsuit waiting to happen.
I see.
But fortunately, there are a lot of, some studios we've updated in Santa Barbara. So we have a sort of, it's more like a rubber carpet
mm-hmm.
that can actually get mopped every day.
Oh.
So, yeah, so in Santa Barbara, we have a really good smelling room. It's really clean. It gets clean every day. And so that helps a lot. The carpet, unfortunately, can get really stinky.
Well, yeah, it ends up smelling like a locker room sometimes.
Yeah.
I've been to some anyway. They do smell like them.
Yeah, it's just for safety because people do, you know, fall down sometimes. And if they land on a carpet, it's just, you know, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Body.
So the thing is, too, speaking of slippage, I mean, that's a big market for Yogi Toes towels, correct?
Yeah, a lot of people find those really helpful. I don't sell those in my studio, which I probably should because they are really good. And they cover the entire mat. So people most of the time people are using two towels to
mm-hmm.
cover their entire mat, and
mm-hmm.
then they get all kind of rumpled and crinkled as we turn
mm-hmm.
on the mat. So
yeah,
those
yeah.
are a really good product.
Yeah. So, okay, so I had asked you before, like, what is a good brand? If you wanted to go get some Bikram clothing before you actually showed up at a Bikram studio, is there any place where you can buy it, and is there any brand that you look for?
Well, Shakti is definitely the brand of preference for most of the practitioners who are willing to spend a little bit of money on their yoga clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Shakti is, I would say, about 30% cheaper than Lululemon.
Wow.
And it is that lycra material. The Lululemon, the Luon that Lululemon uses is kind of a thicker material.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really cling and move with the same level of comfort that Shakti does.
Mm-hmm. It probably gives you more compression too, so which might be a little bit more uncomfortable in the heat.
Yeah, it's just not quite as comfortable, and their elastic bands are a little bit just kind of thicker and tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Shakti bands are they don't dig into the skin at all.
So you don't get the muffin top.
Which is really nice because I find my skin is just really sensitive to seams.
Yeah.
And to elastic bands, and even if the Lululemon product fits me really perfectly, I still find myself just kind of bothered when I'm doing a Bikram practice by the width and the thickness of the elastic band. Like when I bend over, it kind of presses into my skin and my belly. So people love the Shakti stuff, and they have really cute prints and really flattering tops. They're definitely kind of sexy, and most of the time it's either women who just like to be fun and flirty with their clothes, older women, or it's a lot of the young girls who prefer the Shakti.
Yeah, and so you sell that at your studio.
Yeah, I don't see Shakti in any retail stores. I think it's just sold online at ShaktiActiveWear.com.
Okay.
Or in the studios, pretty much.
Yeah, I guess if you go to class often enough, too, you start looking around at what people are wearing, and if you really like something somebody's wearing, you walk up to them and ask them where they got it.
Yeah, I sell a lot of that stuff at my studio. It does really well. And actually, there's a new brand that's been coming out that's called Onesies.
Huh.
And
the baby clothing.
They are even cheaper than Shakti.
Really?
Yeah, they are doing primarily Bikram studios as well, just because they're with the vinyasa and other kinds of yoga, it's definitely a little bit more of a modest standard of dress, I would say, more covering up. And onesies, they do mostly just bandeaus for tops, just the little tiny tube top bralettes.
Yeah.
And then the little shorty shorts. And they've been coming out with lots of different kinds of prints and stuff, but they just do those basic cuts. And then they do also their onesie, which is it's kind of like a leotard, but with shorts. So it's not like a bathing suit cut leotard. It's like a little short leotard. Yeah. The onesie, I never ordered any of those because I couldn't imagine those doing too well. But the shorts and the little bandeaus do well.
And these are also good for hanging around on the beach anyway, I suppose.
Totally.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of yoga studios, too, that do hot kind of yoga, like Baptiste Power Yoga. Here in Santa Monica, there's a studio called Hot 8, where they do heat up the rooms. So I guess, you know, wearing something like that would be appropriate, too, because the rooms do get kind of warm, and it'd just be more comfortable that way.
Yeah, definitely. And if you've got the body for it and you feel comfortable doing it, just wear whatever you want.
It's true. Well, thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I keep telling Sarah that I have to go to Santa Barbara to do some yoga and to do some chanting. So, you know, maybe I'll check out your studio, see what it's like. I have to see what a leather carpet looks like.
Rubber.
Oh, rubber. I thought you said leather. I said, oh, my God.
Leather.
Rubber.
Oh, that would be
I know. rubber carpet. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's easy to clean. Yeah, you can just hose that off or something, can't you?
Exactly. We just mop it every night.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot again, Mari.
Sure thing, Joni. Good to talk to you.
Good talking to you, too. Bye-bye. Wow, the things you learn about yoga that you tend to avoid. I mean, seriously, I have done Bikram yoga. I've done it many times, and every time I go, I think, my God, this is so hot. I just have a hard time with heat, which is really strange because I grew up in the Philippines where it's hot and humid every day. Why I can't do hot and humid yoga, I don't know, but it's me. Anyway, I'm looking at the clock and it looks like the show is about over, so I'm going to go quickly through the list of things to do this weekend. Sound. There it is. Tonight at Zanzibar, Jay Brave, DJ Drez, a whole lot of good music, 9 p.m. It's a hip-hop rap night. Thursday, 8 p.m. Oh, this is Yoga American Dream. This is Casey Gates. This is the one-woman show. 8 p.m. at the Asylum Theater, 6320 Santa Monica Boulevard in Hollywood. It's a Hollywood Fringe Festival. And Casey Gates is going to be doing a one-woman show on the yogic life, is the way I put it. She portrays different characters that would probably be familiar to anybody who's in the yoga scene. That's kind of fun. So that's Thursday at 8 p.m. Friday was the event at Yoga Works with Kia Miller, Sarah Ivanhoe, and Icona, 7:30 at Yoga Works Main Street. Also that evening, Friday, 8:30 p.m. at the Rising Lotus studio in Sherman Oaks. It's Kirtan with Daniel Stewart. He was at Moksha Festival this past weekend, and it was a great turnout. It was great, and I was just so happy for them because they were on the big stage, and they did a really excellent job. So now they're at their home studio in Sherman Oaks, and it's a little bit more intimate, but they packed the room. It's 8:30 Friday. 9 o'clock, Bhakti Yogashala. It's Kirtan with Ryan Brewer and Punuwasu. They're regulars at Bhakti Yoga. They're great, too. It's just something you have to experience. Love those people. Saturday, 9:30 a.m. at Mother's Beach. We talked about yoga, stand-up paddling yoga. Well, this one is with Kira Sudovsky. I'm not quite sure if it's with the same group or a different group, but it's 9:30 in the morning on Saturday, yoga and paddleboarding. 2 p.m., oh, this one, Symphonic Yoga with Brad Kamak at Exhale in Venice. Now, this is an awesome class. He doesn't do this very often. Brad, in his day job, is a conductor of classical music. And when he's not teaching yoga. And all the music that he plays in this class was actually conducted by him. Different symphonies.
I think it might be the Glendale Symphony, the Glendale Teen Symphony, something. But it's all classical music by the masters, Mozart, Beethoven, all the music you've come to know and love, Tchaikovsky, Mendelssohn. It's 2 p.m. at Exhale this Saturday in Venice. Also Saturday, this is fun class, 8 p.m. at the Yoga Collective. It's Contact Yoga with Gigi Yogini. And Contact Yoga sounds like some kind of martial arts fighting, but no, I believe it's just her term for partner yoga. So because you will be touching some person, whether you bring that person or not, you will be partnering up with somebody. So it's totally up to you if you want to bring somebody that you want to partner with or not, or get to meet a new person. Could be fun. That's 8 o'clock on Saturday at Yoga Collective. Also at the Awareness Center in Pasadena, I did mention them, it's a Kundalini place. They have a men's Kundalini workshop at 1 p.m. on Saturday. It has to do with living the lifestyle and a diet and a healthy lifestyle and a healthy diet using Kundalini yoga. So if you are male and you're interested in finding out more about that, 1 p.m. Same place, Awareness, 6:30 p.m. They have Tibetan bowls, healing and meditation. You lay there, they chime the bowls, and you just absorb all that energy. It's usually something that you should do at least once just to see what it's all about. And you can get easily addicted to it because it is just an amazing thing. And Sunday, all I have here is actually not yoga-related, but it's near and dear to my heart because it's in Santa Monica and has to do with biking and culture. It's the Tour de Arts, the Santa Monica Museum of Art at Berkemont Station. It's Sunday at noon. It goes till 7 p.m. We meet there with the bicycles. We bike around Santa Monica and stop at different venues for art. The first stop is the Broad Stage, where Moksha was last weekend. There will be some, I think, music performance there. Then we go to the Santa Monica City Hall from there, and there's another performance. And then at the end, back at Bergamot, there is going to be a bike bell performance where everybody gets to ring their bell in some kind of sequence. Don't know. I'm sure somebody's going to YouTube it. So if you can't go, somebody's going to post that. So, one last thing. As you know, this show is on Kill Radio, and there's a benefit show for Kill Radio, fundraiser, in downtown this Sunday, August 21st at the Redwood. It's on 2nd Street between Hill and Broadway in downtown. It's just walking distance from the Civic Center Red Line Metro station. So go, lots of music. The Christels, Electric Children, Gabriel Hart and the Fourth Wall, John Carpenter, and all the money goes to killradio.org. And it's because of Kill Radio that I am here. So we are ending the show because I'm over time. So the last song before I end is, who do I have tonight? Who do I have? Groovananda, Wynn Paris. This is a CD I picked up, I believe, last year, had him autograph it and put it in my stack of music, and I came across it the other day and I said, why am I not playing this? This is awesome music, so I'm going to play this today. It's from the album Om Spun. But before I end the show, I want to thank everybody who called in today. I want to thank all the fashionistas. Corin Palman, Kia Miller, and Mari Larangera, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, for calling in. Iyengar, Kundalini, Bikram. If you haven't tried them, give them a try. It's good for you. It'll teach you something that you may not have ever done in your vinyasa yoga class. So that's it. Yoga Chat, Accidental Yogist. And I will see you next week. This one is called Kali Ma.